So what matters to you when you eat out? Proximity, price, adventure. Are you passive or are you inquiring? And what questions do you ask? Maybe about provenance or seasonality. Like everything in this suddenly rather interrogated modern world, our relationship with restaurants is a changing one. Now, the project we're about to talk about is both a symptom and a guide in all of this. It's an engagingly interactive website and a book now with a fresh Australian edition. Its editor is a name you will know, food writer, critic, editor of Truth, Love and Clean Cutlery, Australia. It's Jill Duplay. Jill, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you also for assuming there are people there who will recognise my name.
Oh, they will. Am I right that the modern diner is a bit of a changed beast, is a more interactive beast?
Yes. There is talk of the rise of the citizen activist, if you like, when we're talking about the fresh thinking that millennials are bringing to society and to the economy. And they are very keen to connect things back to the environment and to society. So, yes, I do believe there is a generational shift, but I also don't think it's just generational. I think all of us have become more aware of what we have to do and just try and do the right thing.
So the establishments that you've gathered and the book puts together restaurants and it's arranged regionally. We go from New South Wales to ACT and so forth. What are we saying about each of those places? What are we testing them on?
Okay, first of all, we identified the most likely restaurants to tick the boxes of ethics, sustainability, organics, care, community, environmental sort of concerns, zero waste. And then we devised a really, really nasty survey, almost like a self-audit, if you like, and sent that to them. And I wasn't sure how many people would actually, you know, have the time to go through it. But we were just completely knocked out by the response. There were, and I imagine the chefs and the restaurateurs of these 208 restaurants probably filled in this survey at, you know, 2 a.m. With a cold beer after a busy service. But they just poured their hearts out. They wanted us to know everything they were doing. They wanted us to know about their producers. They wanted us to know about local initiatives, communities, closed loop systems, new water saving technology, the things they do with their veggies, their only the one fish that they will buy. It was just fantastic.
My copy of your book, and it's a beautiful object, has fallen open on Fat Pig Farm, which is rather nice. Matthew Evans's place.
Yeah, he paid me to actually crease that page.
And there is a gorgeous plate of carrots and parsnips. And he talks here about his signature dishes, what others say about the place, and then there's a little descriptum is sometimes an ingredient, says Matthew, I'm assuming, is so delicious straight from the ground that Fat Pig Farm serves it unadulterated as a welcome snack. So people get a chance to spruik their wares, to say what they're about.
Which I think I haven't seen that happen before, but we thought it was really important to. So we just divvied it up into what they say, you know, their sort of mission statement about what their purpose as a restaurant, and then what we say, which is not so much a review as a profile, and using our knowledge and experience of that place, and then where we have room, what others say, and just pulling in, you know, a restaurant critic or another good food guide or gourmet traveler or whatever, to just give that little extra different look at it from another angle. And I really like that. It's not a bunch of restaurant critics saying this is what we think. It's actually a much more open, more collaborative and generous.
And yet by inclusion, you know, there is a bit of a test there, and there are people that didn't make that cut. I mean, not everybody is in this book.
That's right. We want them to be in the book, however, and if that means they, you know, need to address certain operational things or the way they look after their staff or the way they pay their suppliers, then that would be fantastic.
So if I find something in there, okay, I'll go there. I mean, what have I? What does that promise? What will this restaurant do that some may not?
So you have to accept that delicious food is a given, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't push that. And so that's going to be lovely. Then the diversity is really interesting. So you'll have something like a little cafe in Sydney called Parliament on King, where it's a social enterprise, and Ravi and Della train asylum seekers and refugees to make coffee and to get them job ready, basically, for hospitality. Now, I only go there for the coffee because it's so good,
because
as well as...
Because you completely lack a social conscience, we know.
But I feel good, right, about that. So I'm not promising that everyone's going to feel good, but there are things that these people put in place, or they have an absolute commitment to growing their own food, or they have an absolute commitment. They have no cool room, for instance, like the Bridge Room, so they get rid of everything every day. Or there are closed loop systems where they send their compostable food to a vegetable grower to compost, put into the soil, enrich those nutrients, grow the vegetables that then go back to the cafe or the restaurant. And these are, it's all just logic, like any sustainable sort of operation. It's pure common sense and logic. A big high-end restaurant will have spent more money on a new technological water system to save water. A little cafe in the country may not be able to do that, but will have connections to the local baker, the local lavender grower, the local... They'll have a cake, like there's a lovely cafe in Brisbane that has a karma cake. That's with a K, and you come in, and if you like the look of that cake that day, then you offer however much money you want for a slice, and whatever you offer for that slice goes directly to their chosen local charity that week. Just little things. There's a little wine bar in Sydney, quite urban, and the owner noticed that his staff were riding their bikes to work, but they had difficulty finding places to lock them up safely, being Sydney. So he created a safe, secure storage for the bikes of his staff. I mean, that's just the tiniest thing. But in a highly competitive and increasingly expensive world for restaurants, that's a very good way of keeping good staff.
So this is what's interesting, is that the sort of things that you mentioned there are becoming commercial advantages for dining businesses.
Yes.
So that speaks to a whole lot of things. There's a change there in customer expectation. But I suspect there's also a change maybe from the sort of people who are getting involved in restaurant businesses.
Yes, a lot of the regional restaurants particularly, we've noticed, are a couple with a kid or two who've just deliberately gone out into, let's say, McLaren Vale or the Barossa, and taken over a small, sort of very modest restaurant, and they've done it deliberately to have that sort of life, to connect with their neighbours, to know where the meat is coming from. So, yes, there's that change, but it's also
which is an expression of community, which is such an extraordinary thing in those places.
I think there's a great need for connecting with like-minded people, and the power that the table has, and the power that food and wine has to bring people together in celebration, is one of the most powerful drivers that we have in our culture.
There's a note up towards the back of the book that says more Indigenous chefs should feature in guides like this.
Yes.
How do you propel that? How do we, and that sense of you know, of provenance, there's a real, you know, direct connection between the food of this place and the people of this place.
Yes, I talk about that as being a fairly parallel universe. And 5 years ago, I got involved with something called the National Indigenous Culinary Institute, NICI, and they recruit and train Aboriginal chefs in the top restaurants in Melbourne and Sydney. And so, and Thank you for asking that question, because it gives me the opportunity to say that 5% of the proceeds of this guide are going to NICI, because that parallel universe, I mean, I got involved with NICI out of sheer non-Indigenous Australian guilt, and it wasn't until I worked with our apprentice chefs and met them and heard the stories and had a few yarns that I realised this is so incredibly important. And 5 years in, we have 7 graduate Indigenous chefs out there working in London, in Tokyo, and Melbourne and Sydney. And we're just beginning a very exciting journey with Australian Indigenous food.
Jill, thank you. It's a remarkable book, a beautiful book, and full of beautiful thoughts from beautiful places. A bit of a treat.
Thank you.
Jill Duplay, she's a food writer, critic, editor of this new Australian edition, Truth, Love and Clean Cutlery. It's out now in shops.